Hi, I'm Daniel Lenzian, host of Western New York Soundstage from Buffalo Rising and Local Matters Studios. Western New York Soundstage is a podcast that looks to explore Western New York's creative economy through a series of conversations with artists, musicians, producers, directors, and authors from Western New York and beyond. On today's episode, I speak to Gabriella McKinley, director of Second Generation Theater Company's production of The Niceties, which is playing at Shays Smith Theater February 14th through March 2nd, 2025. Tickets are available at secondgenerationtheater.com, and that's theater spelled with an R-E. A link for tickets will also be in the show notes. Gabriella McKinley holds a BA in Theater Arts from Buffalo State University. She recently won her first Artie Award for her role in The Color Purple as Celie, produced by Ujima Company, Shays 710, and Second Generation Theater. Gabriella has appeared in several professional productions across Western New York and is the program director at Ujima Company, using theater to serve disenfranchised communities and tell underrepresented stories. In this interview, Gabriella and I speak about theater in Western New York, the relationship between her social justice work and her directing work, and the importance of conversation in the arts. I hope you enjoy my interview with Gabriella. Gabriella McKinley, thank you so much for talking with me today. How are you?
I'm doing great. Enjoying this beautiful Friday. How are you?
Fantastic. I'm also enjoying it. It's good to be back and be recording again. I always like to ask people this question when I start my interviews. Are you from Western New York originally?
No, originally I'm from Staten Island, New York. So I'm from New York City and I spent most of my life there and grew up there. And then I came out here for school. I went to Buffalo State, studied theater there, kept working, found professional work here, was able to do theater and do theater for social justice here. So here became home.
That's fantastic. Is there a story from your youth in Staten Island? And I'm laughing because Gabby and I know each other. I am from Staten Island as well. Yeah. Or was born in Staten Island originally. So is there a story from your youth that connects to what you do now?
Yes. I mean, my whole life I've done theater and performance. That's been the crux of the work I do. I'm actually really new to directing. But I remember I have so many stories growing up and doing theater in multiple different forms, doing it in high school, doing it over summer, doing it in the winter, right? Doing theater camps and all that good stuff. A particular story, well, I guess it kind of is the way I've approached things that I struggle with in general. I had a dance teacher when I was in high school, Miss Christine, whom I loved. And I was saying, oh, I'm not a dancer because I wasn't picking it up as fast as everybody else. And I was struggling a little bit, but I would always eventually get it. I just had to work a little bit harder. And she, one day I said that out loud. I said, oh, no, I'm not a dancer, after she had casted me to dance. And she said, no, don't say that. You are a dancer. And I told you, you're a dancer. So believe it. And ever since then, I realized, you know, I am whatever I put my mind to. I am whatever I would like to be. And I'm kind of doing the same thing with directing now. As long as I work a little harder and, you know, keep at it, then I can be whatever I want to be.
That's beautiful. So you mentioned that you went to Buff State and you stayed in Buffalo. What was it like, or what were sort of some of the early opportunities that you found yourself taking or having in Buffalo that, you know, said, I want to stay in Western New York?
Yes. So people always, you know, debate what the importance of a college education is. And for me, it's really the connections you make with your professors, with other peers. And that's how I got my first gigs, right? I did The Color Purple at Buff State, where I played Shug Avery. And some people might remember that I also played Celie in Ujima Shays 710 and Second Generation's production of The Color Purple professionally. But this was the first time I did it at Buff State. And it was through doing that show and working with my professors and with vocal coaches and other directors and directors in the program that I was able to get my first professional gig at Torn Space Theater. And that was awesome. I had a great time working with Dan. And after doing Torn Space, somebody else saw me in that show and wanted to cast me in another show. And then I did Hairspray and then COVID hit, right? and that's when I graduated. So it was really the plethora of opportunities and seeing how well connected the community was and how well liked and appreciated my work was here that made me say, oh, this could be like a really nice place to keep, you know, uplifting and supporting community, which is always my number one goal, but to also, you know, express myself creatively and as an artist. So then Western New York very much settled into being homey, and now I have friends and family and all that great stuff out here.
That's beautiful. Well, so we've talked about this a little bit, right? But I think that one of the amazing things about you as an artist is that you're able to just kind of work through so many different genres, so many different types of art. What are some of the highlights of your career working in Buffalo?
Oh, well, thank you. That's a really beautiful compliment.
Well, it's true. And
thanks. I would say a lot of them have happened so recently, right? Because, you know, when you're first getting started, you're doing a lot of really like fun projects, but they don't always challenge you in the ways that, you know, the ways that you don't know you want to be challenged just yet. So as I continue to mature as an artist, my projects get richer and richer and richer. Some of the highlights being playing Celia in The Color Purple. I was entirely sure that I wanted to play Suge. Because that's what I was comfortable doing. That's what I had known to do. I'd wanted to play that role since I was a child. So I was intimidated by Celia. And it was in that intimidation that I found that I won my Artie Award and that I found, oh, Gabby, your vulnerability on stage is your greatest strength, right? That's something that I learned in the process. And also doing Toni Stone, where I had to memorize, I played the first woman to play professional baseball. And I said, whoa, Gabby, you can really like memorize some lines. And I also structured my craft a little bit more in like how I approach text and how I approach memorization. Doing Shipwrecked, at Road Less Traveled, another big highlight where Jeremy Cruiser and I played too many characters. I don't even know how many at this point. And it really was a test in my artistic stamina, right? And how much am I willing to put into this, like, you know, in the off season, in the off time, right, to prepare for it. So a lot of every show I take something away, but I feel like those really, I grew a lot as an artist because of them.
That's beautiful. You know, I think sometimes when actors kind of are working in a lot of different genres and are working with a lot of different kind of texts and experiences, so sort of the natural outcropping of that can eventually be directing. And currently you are directing The Niceties for a second gen theater company. How did this opportunity come to you?
Yes. So I was approached by Second Gen to direct this as a staged reading in 2023, I believe. And I remember they had given me a list of plays that they wanted me to read through and see if any of them stuck out to me, if anything I wanted to direct. So I read through them and I was taking my time, right? Some of the other plays took me a day or two to get through. And once I got to The Niceties, when I tell you that was the quickest I had ever read through any play ever, including when I was running late on assignments for class, right? I read it through it so quick and immediately emailed them back and said, I would be honored to direct this play. And they allowed me to. And I had the greatest time of my life, right? Directing this piece. I worked with Anika Pace and Diane DiBernardo, and it was magical. The conversations we had, discussion that we had after the reading, it was truly transformative in like, especially in 2023, when we were still very much in the heat of BLM and these conversations. It allowed me to combine my worlds, I talk about social justice and my artistic craft, and Eleanor Burgess writes it so beautifully, allowed me to combine them on stage. And it was, like I said, you don't often get to do it. You kind of have to fudge like the social justice into the theater sometimes. And this one was just so front and center. I loved it. Mm-hmm. Then after the beautiful discussion, after the stage reading, they made the decision that they wanted to actually produce it. And then they called me again and said, would you want to direct it for real this time? And I could not turn that down, that opportunity. I mean, it's such an, well, at least for me, because I love the play so much and I'm so passionate about it. It's such an easy play to see the vision for and to know exactly how I want this story to be portrayed. And yeah.
For listeners who may not know, can you give us a brief sketch of the plot of The Niceties?
Yes. So it's a discourse between two really intelligent, charming, but also stubborn and strong-headed women. You have a professor who's about in her 60s, and you have a student who's in their 20s, right? They're a junior in college. And they have a really intense discourse about race, history, who gets to tell the stories, who gets to tell history, and who benefits from the privileges of like how history is told today. This conversation, things are said that are life-changing for both of them. So without trying to give too much, that it really is an intense conversation about race and power and who gets to wield it in this country, especially generationally, in that intergenerational conversation.
Stepping into the role of director, how is it different than acting? What has surprised you about the role and kind of being facilitating this room?
Yeah, I use a lot of the techniques that I've utilized as an actor to direct. I'm big on questions. I'm big on questioning everything and specificity, right? How we use our face and our voice and what's the intention and objective behind everything. That's how I approach directing too. The only difference is now I come up with questions, right, that I would like to pose to my actors. And I also come up with questions for myself. And then I also come up with questions for my designers. And then I also come up with questions for everything, right? It's just a lot more questions. And I can't focus just on my character. Now I have to question, right, the set. I have to question the costumes. So it's been a lot of that same approach. I like to give the actors, they say a lot of directing is in the casting. So I casted really strong actors so that they can have the instincts and the impulses and really live and breathe in these characters, so that all I have to do is go, but what is the important part of this moment, of this phrase, right? Or like, what is your intention? This is how it's reading to me. What is the intention of what you're doing? And then just clarify some things. And that's really how I've approached it. But it's very, to me, it's a lot of the same as acting.
That's great. You mentioned kind of earlier that you've worked as an arts educator and as an arts advocate. And you also you have a strong connection to social justice work. How have mm-hmm. you found that has either helped or come into the room or maybe facilitated the room as you're directing it?
Yes. So in social justice work, you have to have a large capacity for empathy, right? And that's something that's beautiful about this play, is that both these women lack empathy. I often find myself in the facilitator role. That's my job at Ujima. I'm the program director there. So I'm always leading some workshop with students or adults or other community members. So I've gotten really good at practicing empathy for other people that don't see the full vision just yet, right? Or that can't see it, or that are working towards it, or have their own vision. That mindset, that practice that I've garnered as a facilitator, as an educator, has really supported me in working with actors, right? And not in working as a leader in the room, because I've done that a number of times. Social justice, I mean, this play makes it so easy because the conversations are rooted in social justice. I mean, that is Zoe's whole things, that she is a warrior and she'll go to bat for the things that she believes in. And just as Janine is a warrior in her own respect as well, right? And she'll go to bat for the preservation of history as she sees it to be true. So I get to lead the conversations and hold these conversations and hold everybody's opinions and facts and truths and to hold it with a lot of weight and respect. So that's something that I'm used to. I feel like you need to do if you're going to be involved in social justice and activism. And I feel like something that you need to have. I mean, every educator knows you need to have that. And you need to be able to give of yourself, but also respect when other people give of themselves. So it's something that I've gotten a lot better at doing, and I've gotten really good at doing.
That's great. In the room. Thank you. What do you hope the feeling in the room is when the audience and people sort of are watching or experiencing the niceties? Like, what would the atmosphere or the feeling in the room be like for them?
Man, I really want them to see, not to see themselves in these characters, but to see the situation, the conversation that they're having, the conversations that they're having in conversations that they have had. I think people will be inclined to resonate more with one character than the other, or to see themselves in one character rather than the other. And I think the best thing that they can do walking out of this theater and walking into this theater is to realize that they have been both of these people at some point in their life, and to really take it from an omniscient perspective, and to really take it from that outside look and go, is that how I've sounded? Is that what this conversation sounds like? Is that what it sounds like online? Is that what it sounds like when I'm talking to my family? Is that what it sounds like when I'm talking in my classroom? Have I done that? And to have that inner dialogue with both these characters, and to wish the best for both of these characters. That's something I find myself doing every time I read the play, every time I listen to them perform it. I go, I want the best for both of them. And I'm watching them self-destruct. So that's what I would like the audience to experience as well. A supreme amount of empathy for both of these characters, because they can't do it for themselves or for each other.
I think that one of the things that makes theater such a unique art form is that it really does kind of force us to witness something and then ask ourselves questions afterwards, right? Of like, yeah. It puts us in the place of questioning. Sometimes I just love to ask this, and you kind of answered it, but I'd love to just maybe press and see a little bit directly if something comes of it. Like, on the car ride home, what do you hope the conversation in the car is between the people that saw the show?
I want them to be so immeasurably torn by who they agree with, right? I want them to recount the points from both their conversations and to go, oh, but Janine said this and it resonated so strongly, but I wish she hadn't done that. Or why did she phrase that this way? I want them to recognize both of their humanities and to see themselves recognizing their humanity, even if they didn't agree with them fully. Because that's something that I feel like, as we are in this, we live so much in social media spaces and digital spaces, that we often can find ourselves in a silo, where we're speaking to voices that sound just like ours. And when we hear ideas that aren't like ours, our first instinct is to just take them out of the silo, right? Or we just leave that area. And it's easy to do so. So what happens when we don't do that? What happens if we pressed on through the conversation, right? And we don't let it get to the points in which it gets to in this play, right? What did they do wrong? How could that conversation have been improved? Are some things I would love for them to be thinking about.
I mean, it sounds like the niceties is going to be an incredibly kind of thought-provoking, but also really exciting evening at the theater. And I think that the way that you're setting it up sounds really amazing and exciting and challenging. And I think all the buzzwords we use about theater.
Yeah, it feels like the exact kind of theater I like to do and I like to see. I mean, if you want thought-provoking theater, if you want theater that's going to challenge your perspective, but theater that's also going to be super entertaining and leave you gasping and leave you going, oh, dang, cringing, but also hopeful, this is the play. This is the play. And it's why I love it. I've read this play probably 20 times. And every time we get to the end of an act, or every time we, like, I hear this one moment, I always, you know, I feel it all. So I'm really excited for the audience to do just that and be along for the ride, because it's a ride.
Fantastic. Those are my questions, but I always love to end an interview by just asking, like, is there anything that you feel was left unsaid or anything you'd like to share with the listeners?
I'd really just like to harp on the incredible talent that's in the room. I mean, Anika Pace, she's one of my favorite actresses, one of my good friends, and she's a beast on stage. She was also in The Color Purple, and she was played Nettie, my sister, well, Celie's sister. And she is, like I said, an old friend and an incredible force on stage. And then right next to her, Pam Mangus. I mean, Pam and I haven't worked on too many projects together, but the last one that we did, it was another stage reading. I was so stricken by her presence and her strength on stage. And it totally translates to this, like, to this show. I mean, they're both incredible, incredible forces and strong women. I mean, if you're into stories about strong women, you gotta see these women really get into it, especially strong, intelligent women, which they both are. But I couldn't be more glad to work with them and with the whole team, really, from our costume designer to our set designer to obviously our amazing producers, Kelly and Kristen. So it's really great stuff.
Thank you. Gabrielle McKinley, it's always great to see you. Thank you so much for your time. And I can't wait to see the niceties. That was my interview with Gabrielle McKinley. I hope you will consider getting a ticket for Second Generation Theater Company's production of The Niceties, which is playing at Shays Smith Theater February 14th through March 2nd, 2025. Tickets are available at secondgenerationtheater.com, and that's theater with an R-E, and a link will also be in the show notes. This episode was produced by Jessica Marinelli. Sarah Potter engineered this episode. In addition to this podcast, you can check out our local event guides posted bi-monthly on buffalorising.com. Make sure you subscribe to the show. If you like the show, please recommend it to a friend. Thanks for listening to Western New York Soundstage from Buffalo Rising and Local Matters Studios.